Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Thank you.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to the Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlin, Gary, Karen, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron tomorrow as the After Midnight Bomber, and then delve into a world of strange magic with Incoherent Dust and Victoria Frost on Thursday. Friday's a split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Tam and Break On Through, and join Aphasiana on Saturday, and she teaches you how to be part sinner, part saint. And then again, Victoria Frost on Monday morning with Hearts of LNP. Now, these shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. Now, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. How's it going?
All righty.
Awesome sauce. Great show lineup we have tonight. Quite a few poems inspired by Frank Zappa quotes. And I don't think anybody I had put up, we started a contest with two different trains of thought. One was quotes from Frank Zappa, and the other one was album cover artwork by Cal Schenkel. And I don't think anyone actually wrote to the artwork. So hindsight 2020, I might have should have probably done that as a separate contest, but that's okay because Cal Schenkel had done so much of the artwork for Zappa's albums. I thought it would be kind of fun to put the two together. But so got some inspiration from there, and then we have a few others from other shows. So,
okay.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and get us started with The Zap-Z Proctologist by Theo Onick, and we do have a recording for that one, so I'll mosey back over to the studio, and here we go.
The Zap-Z Proctologist. Warming around, caught up in library work of proctology, assuming that everything is going just fine, saloons filled to the brim with lucrative patients, clean coming back to life, back to liking their lives, back to life, clean, whistle bubble trouble out clean, of contents nobody wants in their oceans redeemed. Nobody wants them in their oceans redeemed. Trailing around, treating my patients all the same, they're all the same, watching over their sleepless nights, thinking my feelings gone. They're nothing but the same shame, the same pain, pain ashamed being caught by the same lame excuses overheard. Whistle bubble trouble of excuses for what I don't have to say. Yes, nobody wants them in their oceans redeemed. Nobody likes them in their oceans redeemed. Dragging fresh possibilities out of my soul, heart and soul beating broken with tries, to save a world sentenced to live wonderful lives, ending up hurt and alone, hurting too much your inside out, lonely, loving your loneliness, loneliness hating your love, life. Hope's gone. Death casting its striking, stinking breath upon the faces once thought divine. The horror. Blaze of rage. Death amazed by burning fires on the stage of our charades. Cast the stench out and away. My eyes hurt. strained terror of Peel's face. Catching my breath. I'm catching my breath. Clean, coming out, back to life, no regret.
Thank you very much, Payadona, for SoundCloud. That was very much appreciated. And that was a great read. Thank you. All right, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Well, I have to say that as always, I'm impressed with her reading. You know, I'm having the hardest time. I really wanted to Google and look up Savzee, and the only thing I can find is Savzee being a market in Encino, California that sells Mediterranean food, and Savzee, a user on TikTok. So I'm, but still, even without being not quite fully knowing what Savzee is a reference to, obviously I know what a proctologist is. So, you know, excellent, excellent title there. Whistle, bubble, trouble, out, clean of contents nobody wants in their oceans redeemed. Nobody wants them in their oceans redeemed. I like that. It's got a sing-song quality to it, and it's, I guess to me, it's like, so far what I'm getting from that part is that nobody wants to do the dirty work. You know, everybody wants to become famous. I also like that she spelled lame, L-A-I-M. I find that very intriguing. The same pain of shame, being caught by the same lame excuses, overheard. You know, the people who for everything they don't accomplish in life, for every bad behavior, any behavior they have that is inexcusable, they're very ready to point a finger at somebody else. You know, they're always willing to, put the finger up somebody else's ass, but not their own. Wow, cast the stench out in a way my eyes hurt. Drain tower of pure faith, catching my breath, I'm catching my breath. There's certain, because of the repetitiveness in this, it adds a kind of a, anxiety isn't the right word, but there is almost this demand for, to know how strongly the poet feels about this. And, I'm trying to gather my thoughts. Drained tower of pure faith. I think, you know, that's a strong line there because to me it represents the whole idea of after putting up with so much shit, you can only keep your faith in humanity for so long. And just a powerful, a thought-provoking write. And I'm sure I could gather up more lines to comment on, but I'll leave that up to you.
Nicely said. Well, this reminds me of, there was a picture back in the day of Frank Zappa sitting on a toilet taking a shit. And the title of it was By Zappa Crappa. So it was a nice touch that went around. It was a great, a poster. I got the hell sold out of it. So I got that. And then this thought with the proctologist got. Maybe he should remember use a little bit, some more colon cleansing treatments. Then he won't have to be simmering around so much. Because that second stanza hits on that thought of trailing around treating my patients all the same, they're all the same. Yeah, everybody's got an annoying ass that somebody has to dig into. And doesn't like the shit he's getting dealt.
Yep.
And it also hits on that thought of once you get that deep-seated colon cleansing, you might be less full of your own shit, and thereby you won't have to dig into anybody else's.
I like that. I like that. The whole thought of worry more about your own shit and less about everybody else's. Yeah, I have to say this is, it's definitely a clever write, and that was a great analysis of it. And I had completely forgotten, even though I had just seen it like last week when looking up prompts, I had completely forgotten about the toilet poster. All right. So let's check the studio, see if we have any callers. Nope, just a couple of turkeys. All right. And is Deviance by Betty Page. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And as soon as it opens up, I will give it a read. It goes like this. Proceed no caution, Frank Zappa, deviation to rule the nation. Winding roads flow free, chasing past picturesque high, scenery flies by. Roses spinning fine, colorful kaleidoscopes embracing real love. Splattering rainbows paint magical poetry, no hypocrisy, dazzling lunacy to live insane, beautiful, mystical, carefree. And Paul.
Great read, Pam. I can see Betty's moving a little further outside her box. Ah, there's no allusion to sensuality in this. This is just a nice free flow of thought, embracing Zappa and everything about him in the mid-late 60s and early 70s. The colorful kaleidoscopes, the splatter rainbows, the freedom of vision and motion that he walked into, chasing past picturesque high, scenery flyby. There's that nice note of travel and dazzling lunacy to live in sinful, beautiful, mystical, carefree. A nice touch. He did do it his way, so to speak. It's quoting on Frank Sinatra there.
Absolutely.
How about you?
Absolutely. I like that was well said, and you're very right. I have to agree with you. Betty has stepped out of the box again. There isn't any sensual in this. It's not even particularly dark. And you can tell, when someone writes, you can tell when they're a fan. And you can tell she's a Frank Zappa fan. And I like the title Deviance. And you know, she says Frank Zappa, deviation to rule the nation. Because oftentimes when it comes to artists and especially musicians, it's the ones who step outside of those boxes, who make a difference, when they step outside that box, they leave a lasting impression. And yeah, some of her imagery here, it just, you know, it's carefree, it's beautiful. Her poetry, this line right here, dazzling lunacy, describes the beauty of this poem with its imagery, but also describes the Frank Zappa himself and the idea of how carefree and mystical he was. And I also like embracing real love. You know, I think there was kind of, I noticed a lot of his quotes really spoke up about people being individuals and standing up for themselves and not just listening to what everybody had to tell them, but rather just to think for themselves. And then that then becomes a beautiful thing, and she captures that wonderfully. And in nice, short, impactful lines, very well done.
Coming from an irreverent mad genius, don't you go where huskies go, and don't you eat that yellow snow.
That was advice I always got as a kid.
Huh?
That was advice I always got as a kid.
Well, that was one of his songs.
Yep, I remember that. I remember that.
And I'm going to Montana to pick me some dental floss.
I don't actually remember that one. That one I'll have to listen to.
Well, yeah. What's next?
All right. Well, I actually hadn't grabbed the next one, so give me a moment here, and I will get the next one. All right. And what was that strange noise?
A yawn.
What? Oh, you yawned. Oh, my goodness. That was, I think that was a yawn that Frank Zappa would be proud of. All right. And getting back to late night poets. Man, things are sluggish. All right. I swear I just shut my Kindle Fire down and turned it back on to let it, you know, have its rest since it's such a picky-ass bitch. All right. Did it go in? Because all of a sudden it just disappeared on my end. It's supposed to be Never Judged by Vicky Moore. Do you see it, Rex? Let me try again. Because I went to hit send, and for some reason it just poofed off the page. So let me try that again. Okay, here we go. All right, Never Judged by Vicky Moore. And Rex, give that a read for us, please.
Never Judged by Vicky Moore. My gray hair doesn't make me old. Don't mean I'm homeless. That's just my physical appearance. My red eyes don't mean that I'm a drunk. That's just my physical appearance. My mind is sharp. My clothes are comfy. And my eyes are red from allergies. Won't you please see me as other than my physical appearance? And poem.
Great read, Rex. And I always assumed your eyes were red from all that smoking you did. But, yeah, I like, you know, this had excellent rhyme and flow. It was a nice brevity. I like how I'm not really 100% sure what quote she wrote to, because I didn't see her put anything in the A-N. And I'm not immediately connecting it with one of the quotes. However, the general message that I get is don't obviously judge a book by its cover. And I like how she says all these different things, like, you know, because I have gray hair, because I have old clothes and red eyes, you know, doesn't mean these things. And in the end, you know, and then she wraps it up with the you know, this is how you know, why I have these things going on. And also I really like how she says, my mind is sharp, my clothes are comfy. And I think, well, you know, I have to say, oh, she did say prompt 9. Okay, I'm sorry, I totally missed that. Now my eyes open. But the other thing I like about this is not just judge a book by its cover, but it really speaks well to Frank Zappa, who had a very unique, laid-back look, you know. So I'm sure it was often, well, obviously, one of the prompts we had was about his hair and a report. I think, did I put that prompt up? The one where
Frank,
the reporter.
You have long hair.
Yeah.
Does that make you a woman? You have a wooden leg. Does that make you a table?
Yes, that was it. That was it. Yep. And, but yeah, it, you know, oftentimes people just want to dress comfortable. They're not out to show off for other people. A lot of times they want to express themselves, their individuality. And you can't look at someone who doesn't look like your idea of an intelligent person. So I really like this all the way through. But when she mentions my mind is sharp and my clothes are comfy, I really feel like that's an excellent kudos to Frank Zappa and his personal individuality. So, you know, very well done.
Well, thank you, man. Well, this hits on that thought. The 60s and the 70s were that time where the clothes... You wore the torn jeans at the knees and the ripped T-shirt. That was before they actually made them that way and sold them that way. So the idea of that sort is kind of fits in with Zappa itself, but it still walks on that notation of you don't judge a book by its cover because you don't know who you're talking to. I mean, look at Albert Einstein. Guy couldn't tie his own shoes, but... He was a world-renowned genius when it came to computational analysis in regards to the universe itself.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, it's not an uncommon thing for a genius to, not tie their shoes or, just feel like wearing the torn jeans. Now, the torn jeans also came back, I remember, I think it was like in the 90s or something like that, but I never got into them. I do remember the 80s when we had to, we didn't have to, but it was in fashion to roll and safety pin your pants. That was such a dorky style. And parachute pants. Now, there was a horrendous style. But, that was well said there, Rex.
Pinning your pants?
What's that?
Pinning your pants?
Yeah, what it was is, okay, so the cuff of your, where your, the ankle of your pants, I guess you would call it the cuff, leg cuff, you would roll it up, and then you would fold it over anywhere from 1 to 3 times. The whole idea was to get it as tight as possible at the cuffs, and then you would take a giant safety pin, and if you were really cool, you'd have more than one safety pin. And you'd pin the cuff of the pants that had been rolled up and folded.
Well, they rolled up the pants leg in the 50s, but they didn't pin them.
Yeah, well, I guess we had to think of something new in the 80s. But I would like to mention that I brought somebody on, and I believe it is Jeff, but let's find out. Area code 509, you're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
You guessed it, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
All right.
Hey.
All right. So you want to tell us about any fashion statements from your youth?
Oh, man. I was big into the bell bottoms there for a while.
Absolutely.
You know, the bigger the bell bottoms, the cooler,
Oh, well.
And,
They had to resemble the Navy bell bottoms way back.
Yep. They were cool. And then about that time when it kind of died out. Well, where I was from, the bell bottoms were still in. But then when I went in the Army and I was stationed over Fort Bragg, that was done, And so I looked like a real dork when I had my civilian clothes on for a while until I bought some new ones.
Right after that came skinny jeans.
Yep.
Oh,
I had
God.
I think the coolest shirt I ever had was the second time I went to Grenada with the training forces there, the advisory committee for the Grenadian Army. I went by and I bought these flour sack T-shirts that this lady made. They were just cool. So I bought like 2 or 3 of them, and they lasted. They were made out of actual flour sacks, and it was really light, And I loved them. They were great. But I've never been. I mean, me in fashion. Don't go this way, because I'm like. I'm real happy with a pair of sweats and a T-shirt, and luck, maybe they'll be washed. I don't know, But I mean, I'm really big on comfort.
Yeah, same here. It's all about my cotton dresses. I like my cotton dresses. I honestly only wear pants when I need to.
And my wife's the same way. She's not a flashy dresser until there's something like, wedding or something. Then she just goes all out and kind of blows your mind. It's like, well, you're really looking plain here the other day. How come you don't dress up like that for me? Because, but she does. She really knows how to dress when she wants to.
Awesome. Yeah. It's interesting, the history of fashion and how it's changed and came back over different decades. But now, I know, Jeff, you were going to tell me when you were able to read, so do you need us to go to another poem, or are you, let me know when you're ready, or when you will be ready.
I think I might be able to stop up here. Go to that other poem, and I'll try to find a place to pull over. because I'm driving right now. I'm up in the right place, though. I've got plenty of places to pull over. It's just that I'm close to town, and the local cop don't have nothing to do. So, you know, I don't want to attract his. I don't want to attract him.
Well, yeah, especially with all those stolen cameras.
Yeah, stolen cameras, cheating logbooks, you know, things like, just little bitty things like that, that, you know, that go on, you know, I mean,
right.
You know, it's a, you know, I hate to say it, but if I can do it legally, I'll just do it the other way. You know, it's just kind of a, you know, mark of pride or something, you know.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, we'll go on to another poem. And up next is The Grand Illusion by Dammit Dave. And it goes like this. Our freedom's an illusion that the government maintains with rhetoric designed to dupe our simple sheepish brains. The man behind the curtain makes us think that we're in Oz. He feeds us fancy promises that claim they are faux pas. The window to our liberties just painted on the wall. The truth is that the autonomy is just a fibridale. Emancipation can't exist when poverty's a glitch. So then the only freedom's for the powerful and rich. The grand illusion's just a play, a dog and pony show, where prisoners were prisoners of politics, but too naive to know. End poem.
Great read, Dan. I like this one.
Yep.
This is
good one.
This is a little different from Dave. Nice, even flow and rhyming pattern. I like the thought with the Oz and faux pas as a rhyming pattern. That's cool. And he's actually spot on as far as the thought goes. Freedom's an illusion the government maintains with rhetoric designed to dupe our simple, sheepish brains. And then the finishing note, we're prisoners of politics, but too naive to know. Yeah, boy, does that hit on the thought that people need to wake up and smell the coffee because we're actually being fed shit.
Amen.
All right,
to that.
Pam, what about you?
Oh, I agree with you totally there, you know.
What do you think there, Jeff?
I thought it was spot on. I mean, I got the same message from it. It was cleverly done, though. You know, I mean, he and with the rhyme and the meter that he put in was very well done. But yeah, I mean, you know, they're definitely trying to pull one over. I don't know what they're trying to do, but they're trying to do something. I don't know what, but it's not good, whatever it is. And that's both parties, by the way. That's not just one.
Well,
oh yeah,
it's just the one side. The unibrow.
I've never seen the as much corruption as you know, and I don't know if it was always there, and we're just starting to figure it out, or you know, because of the internet, the information's coming out, or that they're just blatant about it. They just don't care.
You're right.
I don't know which
one. It's always been there, and it's more upfront because of the internet, and if certain things are coming to light. Because it used to be you had to read the newspaper, and for some people, you look out in the Midwest, they really didn't get to see any politicians one way or the other, let alone get a visit from the president or Congress. And now,
mm-hmm.
their faces are splattered nonstop in ridiculous motifs to their. The Wizard of Oz antics, and you are definitely right. What they're doing is trying to strip us of all of our rights.
Yep, I agree with you there. You know, and I don't know why they're doing it. I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's the what I see is they're making a move towards a one world government, and what basically the theory is that they won't. Ever have a major world war with the one world government, but I think they're wrong. I think they'll actually create one, and they're going to create more wars, and they're corrupt. Power corrupts, and so the more power you got, the more corrupt you become, so, and the more corrupt you
oh,
have
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Become to keep it.
That theory about one world government and no wars is hyperbole and ridiculous notion, because that's where all the money comes from. That's where they hide their biggest things. When something big is going to bounce across the atmosphere, all of a sudden a huge war pops up, which covers the entire world with everything else. So it gets hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But now they can't hide their shit no more.
No, and I hope not. I hope they get, you know, I think if they keep on doing it, I think it really rattled their cage, that little so-called insurrection they had here in the sixth. I don't approve of it, but I think it really said, you know, you could see they were really upset, and I kind of wanted to know, how come you guys weren't that upset this summer when all of our cities were being looted and rioted and people were being killed and their businesses destroyed, you know?
So that was the point. They found no weapons on that day, and they called it an insurrection. Yet the whole country, they let their cities burn down to the ground.
Yeah, and I mean, the worst that happened was they tossed some paper and one person got shot, you know, and then there was a heart attack. But I mean, come on, there were 300,000 or 400,000 people around there. Somebody's gonna die when you got that many people around. But you know, yeah, it's just, I kind of looked at that and you know, I watched Mitch McConnell on the TV. I said, "You're an idiot, because you should have been this mad when places were being burnt to the ground." And that's the one thing that I listened to the little Trump interview about that. And the one thing I followed him with was what he should have done when these George Floyd riots were going on was he should have stopped it. He should have brought in the National Guard, called it an insurrection, stopped it, and then immediately opened a dialogue to the more peaceful components of Black Lives Matter and a direct dialogue to African Americans so that they could have their piece said and then something could be done, you know. But so he made a mistake there. And I can see part of that is because of political pressure. But
wanted him to go full bore tyrannical so they could pin that label permanently on him.
Yeah. Yeah, that he's a racist and all that. And these things, what's going on in our country is very similar to what happened in Yugoslavia during when Slobodan Milosevic was the president and all that went on, and we went over there and bombed them and all that stuff. It's real similar. I hear we're being called racist.
The color revolution angle.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, if you don't agree with what they're saying, you're a racist. And I've been called that, and I'm like, well, you can call me what you want to call me. I don't care, you know. Because, you know, look, last I checked, the world was round and this works, you know. Being honest with people and stuff like that works, you know. You see it. I've seen it in the Forest Service. When I worked there, you had these crazy people come down and they literally destroyed the Pacific Northwest. They would show films of Plum Creek land and which is private land, and they'd say these are Forest Service clear cuts, and they weren't. They were owned by Plum Creek, which was part of Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and they would say this is what the Forest Service is doing to the property. They're just literally cutting everything down, and that wasn't true. The Forest Service had only allowed 40 to 60 acre cuts, and they only cut in areas that were the trees were so mature that they were on the downhill side. They needed to be harvested to prevent fire, and look what they've done. Nothing has happened in the forest for 20 years in the western United States, and look how big the fires are. And that's
because
it's drier. It's because you have so many tons of dead trees per acre on the ground because the forest hasn't been managed. You know, we've been managing the forest since 1905, and before that, the Indians did. The Indians used to go up into these areas and burn, and they use all this as their little tool for global warming, so you can go buy carbon footprints, you know, or your you create a carbon footprint, so if you buy this from the government, you can be forgiven, and it doesn't do anything for the environment. You know, I mean...
I know.
It just all this is crazy and it's insane, and I think people are really starting to catch on, and it's all it's going to take right now, I think, in this country is a small spark, and we'll be in the middle of a civil war, and it's just one little thing that's going to happen, you know, and I'm sorry that's I blame everybody over there in Washington, D.C., you know, I mean, I really do. I really think that they're corrupt and they're short-sighted. I don't think they understand what's going on in this country. My personal opinion, I think all that stuff in Washington, D.C. needs to be torn down, and everything needs to be moved in the middle of Wyoming, where there's nothing but sagebrush and jackrabbits, so they can tend to the business of the American people and not be distracted by everything else, you know, because that's what their job is. That's what they're hired to do, you know, and it does. They are not here to serve themselves. They're here to serve the people and represent us, and that's their job.
Oh,
and I'll shut up.
They could find some way to use the jackrabbits. They'd be like, jackrabbits cause global warming or something like that.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm a big believer. I'm a big believer in environmental. You know, I mean, part of the reason why I work where I work is because, you know, we're dedicated to hauling this oil clean without spilling, without creating a mess. And the other reason why I do it is because if we're independent economically for our energy, we do not have to fight foreign wars. It can change our policy in the Middle East. We don't have to worry about what they're doing if we can take care of ourselves here, you know. And we don't have to be held like during the Bush administration and the early Obama administration. We were held hostage by the fuel prices, you know. And it just, you know, I mean, $4 or $5 bucks a gallon for gas it was ridiculous, you know. And so I don't want to see our soldiers over there fighting no more, period.
Yep.
I have to say,
go ahead, to both of you, well said, excellent conversation, but it is time for me to get the show back on track. All right.
Okay.
So
I'm stopped, so.
All right. Well, I enjoyed listening to both of you talk, and I was definitely agreeing with a lot of what you had to say. And what I really like, this is one of the signs of a good poem, is one of the things, in my opinion, that good poetry does is it sparks conversation. You know, it shouldn't leave our minds stagnant. It should want us to talk about something. And I have to agree with Rex. This has a wonderful ABAB rhyme pattern.
Yep.
So very cool there. Nice flow. You know, I do like how there's no particular pointing at any particular party. It's really all about how people in higher power, they get that, you know, that absolute power that corrupts. And that so many times we are sheepish. That second stanza was great. The curtain, the man behind the curtain with the, he feeds us fancy promises. I mean, the whole stanza was great, but I particularly like the whole idea of being fed those fancy promises, because so oftentimes we're willing to sell our own personal morals and beliefs because the promise just sounds like it'll be so delicious. And so just an excellent write all the way through, and very well done.
Yep.
And are you ready now, Jeff?
Yep, I'm ready.
All right. Now, just to let you know, Rex, just right is actually from the Break On Through contest. It was inspired by a song called Poseidon. And I know you haven't gotten a chance to listen to it yet, but I recommend it if you do get a chance. And all right, there you go, Jeff.
Okay. Okay. I kissed you in the dark. This morning I kissed you in the dark and stumbled around to get my things and head out the door into the mountains, headlights cutting through ribbons of darkness. In the dawn light, I followed a path through the forest, the slender, strong trunks of trees with their needled boughs wet with dew. I crossed the first stream of white water, rolling over rocks with their song in a constant state of tone, but with ancient lyrics no one understands, though they soothe you. The ground was covered with little brown mushrooms, yellow violets, and small shoots of tiny evergreens twisting sunward in the cornflower sky interposed by a few stray clouds. As morning progressed, I ascended into the upper elevations where hemlock and spruce in their shaggy boughs with green-blue needles dotted clearings of lilies and blue lupine. To the shores of a deep blue lake where a few deer drank from the shore and did not mind that I appeared drinking as well, the clean cold exploding into my heated body. A few tadpoles wriggled their tails in the shallows, and a whiskey jack landed on a silver snag with a curious gaze from its sable eye. There above, in the ridgeline stood a mountain in its cragged glory, and it rumbled within me. I thought about you, and I thought about you and I and all the mountains climbed from the bottom of expansive valleys. How here and now I can still feel that morning kiss as you slept in warm dreams.
Great dream, Jeff. Thank you very much. And Pam, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, that was a wonderful read. And I really like this. It's beautiful and it's epic. I like that it touches on everyday life. It reminds me of a friend of mine whose father was he worked in the logging industry. And, he woke up really early in the morning. And, he just always was doing things in the dark and he'd kiss his wife goodbye. And, so I like that you start this out in that those everyday moments between a couple. The getting up in the morning, the kiss, the moving around, doing those everyday things. And then you bring us into the wonder of nature. And one of the things I like about your poetry, and particularly this one, is that you take us on every spectrum of nature. You don't just show us the tall trees, the hemlock and the spruce, but those, the little brown mushrooms, the details, the tiny details that oftentimes people overlook. And, just really wonderful imagery throughout. And then I like how there's that connective loop. That's, to me, and always when I say something about poetry, oftentimes it's my opinion as a non-professional, but someone who just has opinions, is that I like poetry where there's almost like there's a connection, a loop between the ending and the beginning, because you start us out with that kiss and you leave us with you standing on that mountain ridge remembering kiss. So wonderful, just absolutely beautiful and wonderful imagery. Very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. For me, this is all about those things that we've long forgotten and we need to get back to. That is the thought to actually being involved in life itself, understanding everything in and around us. And that comes with nature itself, because you hit on that thought with the ground was covered with little brown mushrooms, yellow violets, small shoots. People don't understand the interconnectivity of life and how it works in a forest. I mean, you got these big old growth trees that have weaved out their roots, and they sap off a lot of water, but they also feed everything around them, because they don't need all the water going up, but they do need the rest of what's around them to also mature itself. So they, in essence, help everything else. And then there's the mushrooms. They grow in big crops. They're interconnected. And then there's moss. And there's a whole life system underneath the ground that most people don't understand at all, because everything is connected in one way or another. And I like the thought that you've been just a traversement from that morning kiss in the dark, and you go on your trek. And that's the thought to indulging in nature, understanding, seeing, and viewing everything. That first stream of white water rolling over rocks with their song in a constant state of tone, but with ancient lyrics. And that goes back to my original thought, not being connected. Those ancient lyrics are that which we used to feel from the earth, which we don't really entail anymore. And the thought of actually seeing those tidbits of beauty that walk all around us, but we don't take the time to actually breathe it in or even watch it.
Yeah. I didn't when I was younger. I was, when I was fighting forest fires, I mean, you never spend any time thinking about it. And then as I got older and stuff, and I walk a little slower, and then you start looking at it and you start seeing it, and then you really appreciate it. You know, that's kind of what I got, was just, and the kiss with, like, my, I used to do this with my wife all the time, was, she normally slept in on Saturdays. So I would normally get up really early in the morning and give her a kiss, and then I'd get out and I'd be, kind of freaked out about all the things I saw and taking pictures and hiking and all that. And then just kind of in the middle of this meadow, it's like you'd start to think about your wife, or, I'd start to think about her and sometimes kind of miss her, And those times have gotten more dear because, we're fighting cancer. And she's, at this point, it's really been tough the last 3 weeks or so. She's really had a hard time, and she went all the way down to 88 pounds, and now she's stabilized, but we don't know, so we don't know where we're at with that. And I'm over here working because I promised I'd build her a new house, and we tore the old one down, so we're, I guess those times are getting to be more precious right now.
Absolutely. One day at a time.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. You're both in my thoughts and prayers, and I'm...
Oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah. And...
That's it. It's...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel sorry for myself, in some ways, this whole thing we've gone through has kind of proved our love, and it's brought the family close together. I mean, her children are just super, they work together. They make sure that when I'm gone, that she goes to chemo, that she's watched all the time. I mean, they hand her off, and really take care of her. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, there's a side of it that's really beautiful, I guess, for lack of a better word,
Right, it is difficult to find the right word, but you're right. Right.
She was worried about everything that went on, and I just, like I told her, I said, the only thing this is going to do is make me love you more. It don't matter. Whatever we got to go through, we're going to go through it, And, we're starting to realize, I mean, I think everybody realizes that the odds are stacked against us, but we don't say nothing. We just keep on doing what we're doing, because it don't matter what the odds are, That's why we play football games and we see who wins, We fight till the end, and that's, I wouldn't ask her, if, as long as she wants to fight, I'm right behind her,
Absolutely.
And, but I'll tell you, that pancreatic cancer is a tough one. It's a hard cancer.
Yes, it is.
And so I'm just real proud of her that she's tried so hard.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Absolutely. She sounds like a strong woman.
She is.
Let's see. What was... Oh, and I wanted to say on your comment, Rex, I really liked that you mentioned and brought up the connectivity between nature, you know, that how much of different aspects of nature depend on each other, and even how much, you know, we depend on nature and nature depends on us. There is, as you know, I know you weren't talking on a universal level necessarily, but rather just within the ecosystem of nature. But I really feel like on a universal level, there's this kind of connection between everything. But I like that you brought that up, the connection between nature. So, very cool there. And up next is Day in the Knife by Jim Bellamy. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
All right. Day in the Knife by Jim Bellamy. Wow, what with youths, nudes, and cradle vice, we must live upstairs. Wow, what with veins, dudes, and candle Christ, we must live in hairs, and we make up sin from skinny airs, and we see a summer of lice, dreaming of a vaginal sea height, and the lords of green hell hang loud toxins from the funeral bell. Chilled winter summons ivy binds and radio sirens, and the cards of quickened diamond daub a dragger with alarms, and the screens of saviors harden, and the walls of windows shadow feral taxicabs. Ambulant idols pray where sin casts a crab upon a tree of murder. Oh, as the sun streams from deadened guns, then Mandarin currency strum washy city guitars, and we smoked already year, and we choked on a bull tear. L.A., we must live in hollows, and we must hear sex break. I stood against God's Jeep. Oh, I lathered after gem sleep, and the countries of my mind's heap combed the busman's leer. The wives of woolen dew had impassable rings. The widows of old stings cut a hairnet from hero's dad. A time bomb had a city swag, and old sleep sent us the dreams of islands and cabs, and the wives of the dew soul wheat, crying, oh, the first fruited face we had dappled under dally, oh, the fierceness of space cut us, and we fell into the moon, and the sandman of the mad rode us unto Sunday, and the doctors of our tomb rode a dilly space, tut, 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 I espy a cold tent, oh, I sleep out in a star, I espy a soft mint, ah, as my car. Then dyers will teach the poor, and dairies in a hill must read our wills and start scent. Leads us to blue water, the side of a mill has eyes. Oh, the birds in a frill keep sighs. And when once Mistress Aladdin drops a can in the rain, then we supper after Paladin and whispering skeins, play pool with dollies and a whirl that one outgrabs. Daughters of teenage brawlies, factories harvest old women, nunneries arrest old children, and odes to God's navel, dig steps with bestial eye cradles. The rags of stairs are filled, and the rags of prayers are wrapped in sylvan snares, and we swore for men, and we fed eels to hens, and moon airs, chauffeur monks unto a green space where May's shoe hobbles against pierced blued body stasis, and a junkie in the bed uses a metal bin, and the pig's bases great for spunk. Get off your horse and drink your milk. Get off the force and drink hot silks. Millers weep for fire when spun wind swirls. Get off your horse and drink your stilts. Get off, low-cum, let reflection dazzle prunes with sand. Lo here, now a cocking horse, swelled up by the juices of the city. Ooh, give a good hand to the gal on the piano. Oh, let wisdom suck yon island. A wizardry of widows weds the body, and the body bountiful listens to ditty, and a mean green mummy body drives a sitar under churches where over under tar sink fish beneath stinking crocus cigars, aqueous beauty paces, oh, old viscous ladies peer from laces, and blind blondies brag from mirrors. We awoke with a mean start, then fell into the rain, and the rest sucks a jam tart. Oh-ho, ah-ho, ah-ha, ah-ha, oh-ha, ah-ha, amen. And Paul. All right, Jeff, what'd you think about that? Damn.
It was interesting to say the least. It was very whimsical. You know, I mean, it was kind of all over the place, but it was good. And there were a lot of imagery that kind of popped up in my head and stuff like that. This is one of those kind of poems that I think it would be a performance poem, you know, somebody on a stage, microphone, maybe some music, and they would perform before a live, like a slam, you know. That's kind of what I gathered. It's kind of like a, got a real hip hop feel to it and strongly rhymed. That's what I gathered from it, but it was good and it was a good read.
Thank you very much there, Jeff. All right, Pam, how about you?
Well, first of all, that was an excellent read there. I really like this. It's Jim's usual abstract kind of surrealistic type poetry, but it is slightly different in that there's almost seems to be a different format in the way that it's laid out. It kind of made me think of a Jim Morrison poem. Like I could honestly, like if I would say I'd have a, if I had a choice between you reading this and Jim Morrison reading this, you might be my second choice, but you know, it would be a hard choice to make. Just wow. I mean, there is something whimsical about it, but you really feel like beneath the whimsical, there's also a message. Like, well, for one thing, I noticed that the color green is mentioned over and over again. And you know, when I hear the color green, I think of absinthe, or however you absinthe, how do you pronounce that? You know, that drink that was popular with poets. I'm trying to pick out from a particular line. And we make up sin from skinny airs, and we see a summer of life, dreaming of a vaginal sea height, and the lord of green hell hang loud toxins from a funeral bell. I think there's something in the idea of those things that we blame and the attention we try to get. I like law. I don't know, it's a weird thing to like, but because it makes me think of L.A., but it also, you know, just kind of makes me think of the whole idea of just taking a deep breath. I stood against God's jeep. Oh, I lathered after Jem's sleep in the countries of my mind's heap. Combed a bit busman's rear. Combed a busman's rear. I like that because you think of somebody who, well, it's either the person riding the bus, in which case, you know, bus riding is very much all about people watching, or it's the bus driver. But in that case, it kind of takes a different thought of the idea that the bus driver is in charge of a lot of people. I don't know, it's almost, you got to, it kind of gives me a thought of somebody being high on power. Let's see, oh my goodness, there's so much to dig into. Play pool with dollies, a world that one out grabs, daughters of teenage brawlies, factories harvest old women, nunneries. I mean, right there, an ode to God's navel is, you know, we're worshiping God because he's awesome and powerful, but there is, within humanity, there's this hypocrisy that we're not taking care of those people told us to take care of. And by we, obviously, I don't mean me, you, and Jeff, you know. But, like, in general, we overlook the young, we overlook the old. And if somebody doesn't fit into our idea of what a good person is, like a prostitute, we overlook them. So I just, a wonderful, thought-provoking, like, powerful imagery. I do have to say I really like this line, let wisdom suck yon island. But I'll stop there because I know I could say more because it's just got so much, but I'd like to hear what you have to say about it, Rex.
Well, it bites on a number of subjects, and because of the language, it kind of walks along a sort of Bukowski and Ginsberg sitting down to play out some thoughts together, and they intertwine some of their the ease. I mean, I like the thought with the cradle vice and then the candle Christ. You could run that as a thought out of Ginsberg, and you could hit the thought with the women as something coming out of Bukowski's mind, and then just marrying everything together. And it does hit along the lines of what one might find on a city street. And then you got Shadow Feral taxi cabs and the wolves at windows and the people who leer looking in the windows, whether at the back of the house or in the store windows looking in to see what's going on. You think about washy city guitars. There's that kind of notice to buskers. And then you hit that, we smoked already and we choked on a bald tear. I could see that as a thought Ginsberg would pop out. And God's Jeep. I mean, kind of think of God's Jeep as the old Willys. And then you get this thought down here, cut a hairnet from Hero's Dance, the widows of old strings, the wives of the dew saw wheat, crying, the fierceness of space. There's so much different language in here, as well as the thoughts of Paladin being offered up, and Hero himself up earlier, and then you get Chauffeur Monks. It hits on a whole lot of people in a particular place, and everything that comes with it. But it's drawn out in a nice abstract manner, which offers up what the viewer is seeing.
Absolutely. I like that you brought up the idea of Bukowski and Ginsberg exchanging thoughts. And you're right, when a poem is abstract, it does kind of leave a lot of it open to interpretation. So, great comment there. All right. Up next is For Christ's Sake, Stop Blaming God by Mindshadow. And it goes like this. Kindergarten shit set some sort of record, mouth washed out with soap. Kinder prison camp punishment, transgressions against expectation, sins. If you will indulge my reverie, the wages of sin is death, so Romans tolls, architect of small child's undoing, intones educational catechism. No bells or stained glass, this is public schoolboy, sensible black shoes and stained class, and strained class. Commandments, proper manner to comport myself, but the needle skips and twitchy grip slips. We have waves, black sheep, crones, drones. You ask why questions we stride, corporal correction, learning trunk to tail, group thinks she thought it ought, hardwired jackass gonna find his own way. Extension, retention, detention. Boomed authoritarian adult, while wise child sat cross-legged on a rug and took his lumps. He had already held death, been screamed at, struck, and bled, church pews filled at funerals, still more for the young. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jeff, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
Oh, I can kind of relate to this because I was that kid that always got in trouble in school and never, I was kind of a, what do they say? I think the word was incorrigible. That's what they said. I was incorrigible. It starts right off. You kind of know right where he's going with the first few kindergarten shit. Set some sort of record, mouth washed out with soap. I mean, I had my mouth washed out with soap by Mrs. Blomberg, and I still remember to this day because she took me up there and she said, open your mouth. And I opened it, and she said, ooh, it's dirty in there. And then she filled it full of soap, and I cried bubbles. But yeah, and it's very, you know, I love how he goes into learns the trunk to tail, group thinks he thought it ought, hardwired jackass going to find his own way. I mean, you can see that conflict where the nonconformist or the kid that's not being reached, you know. And I think that happens in school now a lot more than it used to, possibly. But overall, this is a great write, and it hits a real, you know, kind of a real tender issue because, you know, there are some kids that really do get left out because they don't want to think like everybody else. They want to be an individual.
Absolutely. Well said, Jeff. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really, really like this. I think it's a I like that it's got that raw personal touch to it, and you know that the idea to me that the children who ask why are the grown-ups who ask why, and those are, you know, are the people who should be the future leaders of the world. You know, and but oftentimes, and I think it has gotten better. You know, it used to be. Now, I was very lucky with my parents, as I was allowed to ask all the why questions I wanted. Other adults didn't tolerate it so much, but my parents, despite numerous other flaws as all parents have, were very encouraging to always ask why. And so, you know, and to me, you know, this is about trying to stifle that individuality, that person who wants to think for themselves, who has questions about the status quo. And I also think it's a right that many people can relate to, that they've been in that situation where you've been the outcast, been harshly judged. You know, and oftentimes the children who act out are the ones who are going through something in the background. You know, at home or wherever, you know, whatever the child is going through, if they're often acting out for a reason. I just think this is a wonderfully emotive, thought-provoking write. And on a technical level, the inner and end rhymes and the play with words was just excellent and very well done.
Great comments, you guys. I mean, this kind of hits on that sort of. I agree with both the angle of this, and it does hit on that sort of being comported and compartmentalized into a singularity where you have to learn this. This rhetoric is what you will memorize and learn instead of actually opening up the minds to the truth of things in reality, and instead of there's no expansion of thought. What is given the curriculum is so rigidly adhered to that it walks a strict line like you would find in a communist country. Yes, these are your leaders. This is what they do. I mean, the basics aren't taught these days. Most kids don't know how to balance a checkbook. I mean, come on. That's a basic. That's something they have to learn in life. They have to know. Those type of basics aren't taught anymore. And if you want to get into business, the sort of operations taught anymore, at least the basics, that should come in junior high school and high school before you even go to college. You need the basic backgrounds of all this stuff you want to get into, but you don't get it in junior high and high school anymore. Just like shop and home ec used to be a prevalent thing. Because you needed people to go into cooking angles and fixing machinery, but it doesn't get taught.
Yeah. When I took home ec in junior high, that was like one of the last years. I think it was like not long after that that the school started giving it up. And you're right. And you know, it's gotten to the point where they don't teach cursive anymore, so that's going to be, like, a major, like, ancient written language there. But great comment there, Rex. All right. So, Jeff, are you able to read for us?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Up next
okay,
is
I'm there.
Ain't Nothing Sweeter Than a Ballad Sung by Justin Bieber by Papa Terminus. And go ahead, give that a read. And Rex, call on me last to comment. Thank you.
Here we go. Ain't Nothing Sweeter Than a Ballad Sung by Justin Bieber. We tortured your souls with psychedelic acoustic mellow tones. The sound that chills our kings on thrones brought you bipolar bears riding on unicycles in a downpour of philosophy. Our pickles are not sweet, they're sour. Vendors crossing the street in the hour. My pickle don't get no sweeter than a love ballad sung by Justin Bieber. We tormented your thoughts with pictures of 200 motels opening, taking you inside a sleazy boutique where all the Catholic girls like to meet, drinking down Boone's Farm and Ripple, not gonna twist your nipple. Just wanna tell you that our pickles are not sweet, they're sour. Vendor crosses the street in the hour. My pickle don't get no sweeter than a love ballad sung by Justin Bieber. We brought your psycho riffs when Stevie got his spanking. Titles and beer is all I craved. When the devil wanted me to sell my soul, I was ready to sign. I didn't care. You don't know, devil, like all musicians. We're in it for money. I laughed as I signed on the dotted line, and I just want you to know that our pickles aren't sweet, they're sour. Vendors cross the street in an hour. My pickle don't get no sweeter than a love ballad sung by Justin Bieber. Yes, my pickle ain't no sweeter than a love ballad sung by Justin Bieber. End of one.
Great read there, Jeff. Thank you very much. I like the irreverent shortness, especially with that ending line, my pickle don't get no sweeter than a love ballad by Justin Bieber. That has a nice touch of denigration to it that I like. But this hits on so many thoughts that bipolar bears riding on unicycles, a downpour philosophy. I like that. And there's notations to 200 motels opening, Boone's Farm and Ripple. Not gonna twist your nipple. I remember Boone's Farm and Ripple. You remember those days going back? But the thought with the hits on this, it is such a nice irreverent thought that it plays well because it hits on that notation of meeting the crossroad demons, so you can sign that contract and hit it big as a musician, as he got that one line, don't you know, devil, like all musicians, we're in it for the money. So I laughed as I signed on the dotted line, and I just wanted you to know. That was pretty cool. I enjoyed this. How about you? What do you think, Jeff?
I loved it. I mean, I read it before, and the Papa Terminus, he definitely, I mean, he's got some really cool stuff, but this one really is awesome because it kind of criticizes you know, when he brings up Justin Bieber, it's kind of like, well, they don't do it like they used to do it, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, you take some of the old artists and stuff like that. I mean, you got to admit that some of the older rock and roll is just, you know, I mean, there's kids that listen to it now, you know, and they like the music. So it says something for the artists of yesterday and the way they used to do things. And I think he brings it out in his poem, and he does it in a very clever, skillful and way in rhyme and meter and good solid refrains, you know. I mean, to make a good poem like this or a poem like this work, you have to have good refrain, and he's done that for sure.
Well, absolutely, and I've seen a bunch of those. There's a ton of today's kids digging on music from 40, 50 years ago and enjoying it. I've even seen some hip hoppers going back and listening. Oh man, listen to the beat, and then they listen to the words and say, "Ooh, this stuff is good."
Hey, dude, that old hard rock and roll and stuff like that is just, you know, I think it's going to stay around forever. You know, I mean, it's just good music.
Yes, it is. All right, Pam, your turn.
All right. Well, I really like this. First of all, I like that he chose the prompt that wasn't officially a prompt. You know, every time someone shares this picture, a Justin Bieber fan discovers Frank Zappa, because obviously it wasn't a Frank Zappa quote, but I couldn't resist putting it in the contest. So very cool there. Wonderful rhyme, playful play and with words. Just, you know, it's kind of got that edgy sense of humor. It very much, it actually feels like a song that Frank Zappa would write. And, you know, to me, one of the things about music, now I am not a Justin Bieber fan. There is a lot of new music I don't like, but there's also a lot of new music I do like. And I've always been very open to listening to the type of music that my parents, well, my kids listen to, because it's a chance to bond. But also, even like my mother and I used to always listen to George Thorogood together. And then I got her listening to Rob Zombie, or like the Everly Brothers, and Elvis Presley were another one that we both we listened to together. It kind of gives you that chance to bond over something and to learn about the other person. I remember when my oldest son was younger, he said to me, "Mom, play me one of your boring songs from the 90s. And so I said, "Okay, well, here." And I played Champagne Supernova and from Oasis. And he said, "I didn't know you were going to play the one good song from the 90s. Because he actually ended up, for a while, Oasis ended up being one of his favorites. Anyways, slight sidetrack there, but not completely, because I do feel like this does bring up the idea of difference, and the fact that I was listening to a little bit of your comment, Rex, and, you know, the idea of that generational connection. I really like, there's a wonderful bite in this. Well, I do like that line, "Yes, my pickle ain't no sweeter than a love ballad sung by Justin Bieber. And don't you know, devil, like all musicians, we're in it for money. I laughed as I signed on the dotted line." Very cool. Great humor. All together.
That was a nice bite at Bieber and his pop and teen idol worship, so to speak.
Yes. Absolutely. That is a good point there. It was for sure. Excellent write and very well done. All right. Now the question is did I go and grab the next poem? Probably not. So I will go ahead and do that. So let's see. It's Rex's turn to read. This is a good one for Rex. Okay. Now, this poem at the very end, there's some Greek words. Unless you know what they say, you don't have to attempt to read them. It's been too many years since I've read Greek. I would have had to actually go down to my basement, dig up my Greek, learning Greek books, in order to find out these few words. So I didn't bother to do that. Just giving you a warning there. Up next is Schizo's Savior by Rob Cohen. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
All right.
Schizo's Savior by Rob Cohen. Shut the fusion modulator and plug into schizophrenic circuits, surrounding loops of drowning sound, and climb, exiting the fire escape of this spinal staircase, where six pomegranate chambers exist behind six doors on six floors of the unexplored skyscraper mind. Elevator on the ground floor of Maslow's pyramid reads out of order, font formed in triangle hieroglyphs, barricaded by walls built with invisible force, which redirect and channel traffic by dangling pornographic technological fruit to draw and divert the carts long departed from cathartic paths into inescapable, misleadingly labeled emergency exit trap doors. Grip of electric systematic change is breakable, however hardwired expressions require unbroken collective plug formation. Neurotic moments of meteoric movement, five rings protected by circles of military tactics and campsite setups. Layers of division reinforce the spheres. Fireside sweet dreams for left-labeled warriors. Sung signals lullabies by online Fort Wars. Boundaries erased on the bridge where Oedipus slayed his prophecy, and an endless cut and paste of Rubik's Cube sticker and deliberately hidden puzzle pieces. Trichoplax Nazi in hallucinatory trance of delirium with proclamations of surveillance programs on and mind control transcends trampolines of mental gymnastics, collapsing the rings as insignificance. Nomad immune to billboard persuasion, minor steadfast to monkey bars without the downward pull of tribal memorabilia, and sneakers include cultural tongues, the card played through dumb and numb vision by mechanical diversion, and may. And I don't know the Greek. And poem.
Well, I have to say, even without knowing the Greek, that was an excellent read. I wouldn't have been surprised if you had known it, but, wow, I mean, yeah, that was an excellent read, and very cool.
Well, go ahead and finish the comment.
Okay, I will do that. All right. Oh, my goodness. Shut the fusion modulator. That is such a, you know, a great play on shut the front door. let's see. Okay. I like how he kind of, this poem, first of all, it's visually appealing in the way that he uses the symbols and the lines staggering. Elevator on the ground floor of Maslow's pyramid reads out of order. Font forms the triangle hieroglyphs barricaded by walls built with an invisible force. Fighting pornographic technological fruit to draw and divert the carts I long departed from cathartic paths. I mean, wonderful thought-provoking imagery. The idea of, to me, of being distracted, like there's a message that needs to be received, and there's a distraction keeping us from getting that message. Neurotic moments of meteorotic movement, five rings protected by circles of military tactics and campsite layers of divisions reinforced spheres, fireside sweet dreams for left-labeled warriors. fireside sweet dreams. It's interesting to have that kind of image right in the middle of almost, it's almost like a gentle image in the middle of a bunch of chaos, and which makes me think that the fireside sweet dream is almost like a drug-induced, which, you know, I almost wonder if that doesn't go to the schizophrenic savior. The schizophrenic savior, I also kind of connect with the idea that oftentimes it feels to us like there's an inconsistency when it comes to religion. What else here? Well, I have to say I'm always a fan of writing. Mental gymnastics, collapsing the rings as insignificant. Now, putting the in the parentheses, I thought that's always really clever to me. And the idea that you then have two different thoughts within one word. You know, the what you think is insignificant has all of a sudden been brought into significance. I will say a powerful write all the way through and just very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Jeff, how about you?
There we go. I'm off mute now. the first thing that kind of comes to mind with this is complicated but really good. I mean, the poem draws you in. I mean, as you listen to the words, and it would be one of those kind of poems that I would definitely like to kind of dissect, you know, sort of like Pam did just recently, but even more so, because I think there was layered meanings in the poem. And you could read it several different ways, I think, and kind of come up with something different every time. And, yeah, this guy always brings really, really good poetry. There's no doubt about that. So I really liked it.
Thank you, Jeff. And you're right, he does. I mean, that opening stanza hits me with the thought of the brain, I mean, the mouth engaging while the brain is left in idle or neutral or not alone in the moment. And that second one, elevator on the ground floor, it hits on that very same thought of neurons not firing completely because of you've got that by dangling pornograph and technical obstacle fruit to draw and divert the cats along the party from the party pass into an escapable, misleadingly labeled emergency exit trap doors. So you think there's an out, but it's not really an out. If the mind is drifting into something else because he's got the rim, chain of consciousness going. And he keeps that going down with the electric systematic chain is breakable, yes. And the thought is breaking the chain from phones, iPads, and computers where everything is available in the moment and it's all about game playing instead of the real activity of engaging the brain. And he hits that nicely with the very last, nomad, immune to billboard persuasion, minor, steadfast to monkey bars without the downward pill, of tribal memorabilia and sneakers including cultural tongues, the car plates and dumb and numb vision by mechanical diversion. There's that thought of them, all of a sudden, you're one ist or another just by simple virtue of being this particular persuasion or that particular persuasion, instead of looking at a person as a person. You've got to look at them as this or that. And the thought to mine up steadfast the monkey bars, that's that thought kids aren't going out to play anymore. And the tribal memorabilia and the sneakers. Is that got to have them damn Air Jordans or whatever sneaker they're running out today, that which costs what, $160 to purchase? That probably costs $5 to make.
Yeah, that's part of, I think, what's wrong with our society is $160 Air Jordans made in a sweatshop for $5 a pop. You know, and he does kind of point that in that direction.
Yeah, and he does it with a nice ease of verbiage and choice in language to play, make you think about the piece itself.
He does. I've read some of his stuff before, and it definitely is thought provoking. You know, you have to think about it quite a bit, and you know, that's kind of the mark of a good poet in some cases is when you read it the first time you go, what? And so you got to read it again, you know, because you want to be sure of what the meaning is, and because they got something, they're kind of saying, hey, I got something important here to say, you know, and so listen, you know, and that's kind of what I gather from his work.
Absolutely. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right, great comments. And up next is Soul to Keep by Neutron Bomb. And it goes like this. Kneeling at the shrine of pop culture, knee pads on knobby, twig thin knees, head raised for the stake to carry out a lobotomy, tap, tap, crack. On top of the precipice, sunshine trickles, devouring cracked stained glass windows. The light imitates Morse code on my forehead. I seek a litany of libel lawsuits. Crucifix submerged to amber like a fossil for the 21st century art antique critics to genuflect, marked with the sign of a beast for shock value. Everyone bends over for someone. Click, bang, it's a quarter to ten, and the faithful line up for the body of Christ, Russian roulette for the masses. It's your bullet to keep, and poem.
Great read, Tam. Nicely done there, Neutron. Another thought piece. All right, Jeff, why don't we start with you, and what'd you think?
Oh, boy, that definitely some good stuff. I mean, well, she always brings it, that's for sure. I like the kneeling at the shrine of pop culture, knee pads on knobby twigs, thin knees, head raised for the sake of carry out a lobotomy, tap, tap, crack. I mean, what's that first line really got me. And crucifix emerged in amber-like apostle of the 21st century art critics to genuflect Mark with the sign of the beast, a shock value everyone bends over for someone. What I read into this is really a kind of a criticism in a way of pop culture, or kind of the way we go about you know, we go about our idols, so to speak, and it does, you know, and I think that's where she's going with her stuff. But the abstract and the creative visionary is just outstanding in this poem. I mean, her imagery and stuff like that is nice, and I like the kind of some of the sound, like click click bang, things of that nature she put in there, tap tap crack. I mean, you know, those kind of things really decorated the poem up and made it better. I thought it was just awesome.
Excellent. I like that. Thank you, Jeff. All right, Pam.
Oh, I always like Neutron's writing, and I have to say this one is another thought-provoking one. I like the bite in this, especially in that first stanza talking about the kneeling at the shrine of pop culture, a lobotomy, tap, tap, crack. That whole idea, and I think Jeff kind of touched upon this, the idea that we're so consumed with pop culture and what's popular in the here and the now, that we kind of lose ourselves in that kind of thought. Not even, it's almost like to the point of being a lust. Let's see, what else? Crucifix emerged in amber like fossil for the 21st century art critics to genuflect. I think to me that kind of touches on the whole idea of that so many aspects of religion have become almost fossilized, or it's something to be criticized. The fact that she says so much and not really, it's not a particularly long poem. A Russian roulette for the masses, it's your bullet to keep. You know, I guess the other thing that I like about this is it kind of, to me, I have that, and just my thoughts, that it has that idea of don't pass judgment for other people's beliefs or what they believe or don't believe, because we all have something or someone that we pay tribute to, that we maybe overly worship, or just that's important to us. And we all have our poison that we pick, which is kind of that representation of, you know, we each all have that bullet that we take. But just powerful and definitely a thought-provoking write, and very well done.
I mean, it's kind of a slap in the face. You know, that last line in the opening stanza, a lobotomy, tap, tap, crack. She knows full well that used to be how they gave lobotomies. They put in a steel spike in your eye just near the tear duct, and they tap it with a hammer until it broke the skull behind, and then it severed the brain at that point, and they did it in both eyes. So that was pretty rude, but that's how they used to do it. I like that. I seek a litany of libelous lawsuits. Again, the last line, that second stanza, it's on those thoughts of everybody suing over the mundane and idiotic things these days. And that third stanza, a crucifix submerged in amber like a fossil, there's that thought of the real thought that goes into the crucifix and its meaning and what is supposed to be derived from it has been lost. So because it's submerged in amber, it's been like that for 10 million years, so to speak. And the last stanza is a full thought to sheep hitting on the thought of going to these huge, massive churches instead of doing what used to be the campfire chats, the town where you had the whole town gathered for their church prayers and meetings, and it was done on a local level, not a national level. So you didn't have this lobotomy, so to speak, on TV, listening to this guy for 3 hours preach on this, that, and the other thing while he's living in a $10 million mansion, driving a 60-foot limousine with a couple of hookers in the back, cocaine, and plenty of booze inside of it.
Well said there, Rex. You know, I tell you, Jeff, sometimes when I listen to Rex dissect a poem, I feel like I'm standing by with a rag to wipe his brow and a bottle of water so he can refresh himself. Because it's like listening to a doctor be at work or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he definitely takes it apart. But and I love his insights, though, because one thing I like about what I'm learning here is I've read a lot of poetry. You know, I mean, I've read a lot. And I've written a lot of poems and stuff, but I've never really been out amongst other poets. I mean, this is the closest I've got. You know, so it kind of, I love listening to this because sometimes I don't think I take out of the poetry as much as I should. You know.
Oh, absolutely.
And so,
I know
so,
what
so you guys.
Here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm learning something.
Well, that's what we do. We learn from each other. And, yeah, I really like what you had to say about this, Rex, for each stanza. But I particularly liked what you had to say about the amber and fossil and the last stanza. That was well touched upon. And
thank you.
And up next is The First Was Music by Self Rise and Mojo. And Jeff, if you're able to, give that a read for us, please. Are you on mute, Jeff?
Yeah, I was getting myself off mute. I keep messing with this. This cell phone's smarter than I am sometimes. hang on 1 second. I'm out loading oil too, so I'm kind of trying to multitask here. So, you know, it's fun. Yeah, you got to challenge yourself. I mean, you know, just life is more fun, that more spicy that way. Okay, come on, you silly thing. There you are. The first was music by Selfra's. I can't pronounce his name. Selfris Mogo or Mojo or Selfris Mojo. Mojo. Sorry, I know
it's
I screwed his name up. But
flower, so it's Self Rising Mojo.
Self Rising Mojo. Okay, all right, nice. the first was music. My youth was a social experiment gone wrong. We moved so much. By the time I was 18. The only faces I recognize look back from the jackets of albums I bought in cutout bins and import sections of record stores. Shy and introverted, the new kid every year, who froze asking a girl on a date, the guy in a bar who needed a beer to speak and 3 sheets to make it in bed. It was much easier and a lot safer squeezed by the hug of headphones, the cord strung umbilical to the stereo. Beefheart, Zappa, Peer Ubu songs, like prosthetic hips, at the awkward and out of place, could find a way to fit in. End of poem.
Great read
awesome.
There, Jeff. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, start us off.
I really liked practice. You know, it had a nice flow to it, as Mojo's poetry always does. I like how one line leads into the rest. I feel like there was a really, like, raw, personal touch to this. I think many of us can relate to being that awkward person, that awkward teen, and who connected with music. Now, I will admit I had not ever heard of Pierre Ubu, or however you pronounce it, so I had to Google them. I'm going to have to check out some of the music. I had heard of Captain Beefheart, vaguely, Zappa, obviously. And so I really like how, in only really a few short lines, touches on that time period of youth, where you're moving from place to place, and you're shy. You know, as he says, the new kid every year who grows ass and girl on a date, the guy at a bar needed beer to speak, and three sheets to make it. I thought that was a clever play on words, some great humor, but really, he wraps it up wonderfully with the whole idea that the familiar is the music, but not just the music. It's not just about the music, but the cover on the outside of the album, the artwork, the connection, looking at something that's familiar and beautiful, and just very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jeff, how about you? But you got on mute.
I got it. I try to get to it quicker than to answer faster. And steps, I got to step away from the pump because it's a little. What I liked about it was the accessibility. It was with the exception of that band that I'd never heard of. I thought that was something, you know. I could just kind of relate to it because I remember being, you know, kind of moving in from a new area and the new kid in school, and you know, and you get like a girl, but you can't talk to her because, you know, that still happens to you know, that happened to me all the way until I met my wife, and I'm still tongue-tied. So, you know, I can understand that, and you know, having to have a couple drinks before you can loosen up enough to where you can speak to somebody. I mean, I relate to all that. So as I thought it was a great, great accessible poem.
Absolutely. There's such a nice ease of thought to truth that walks in this, and the social experiment gone wrong. The only face I recognize, look back to the dust jackets of albums I bought. It's a nice touch. That hits on the thought of being a new kid every year, and then he throws that in. And that run there, who froze ass and go, the guy in the bar needed beer to speak, and three sheets to make it in bed. And then the offering at the bottom end was a nice close, because they hit on that thought of the safety in just kind of withdrawing inside to hit on that note of Beefheart, Zappa, and Pear Ubu. Songs like Prosthetic Hips, The Awkward and Out, a place could find a way to fit in, because there was such a notation with Beefheart, Zappa, and Pear Ubu to the being on the outside and trying to get in or fit in, you know that round peg in a square hole, so to speak.
Yeah.
All right, Pam.
Well said there, Rex. And I'm going to guess that you had heard of the band Pierre Ubu.
Yes, but I don't know any songs, so I probably heard something, but I don't recognize. I don't know. Couldn't tell you a song offhand. They're from the mid-70s, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I believe that's what I had. I did look them up, and yeah, it was like 70s, maybe early 80s. Okay, so up next, oh, that's not the poem I meant to grab. So we'll go ahead and give it a read. Up next is Over the Transom, Down the Drain by Thomas B. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Over the Transom, Down the Drain by Thomas B. You've got the Monster Mash. It was a graveyard smash. You got the Chernobyl freaks who still glow after the blast. You ain't got much to offer people if all you got is a meltdown dance. Get a bottle of really nice brew. Get a good pour of draft will do. We all get drunk. Watch the animals that glow in the dark. Drink to our nation's lack of hearts. 3 steps forward then, take 4 steps back. It's the song of retrograde snacks. We are the atom bomb society dealing with our wreck of ecology. We'd have done better building distilleries. Make love, not war. Leave the beer with me. Get a bottle of really nice brew. While you're at it, bring me one too. We will be potted. Watch the animals glow in the dark. Drink like fools. Who cares when the next war starts? End poem. All right, Pam, your turn.
All right. That was a good reading. That was a good song for your voice, I have to say, especially the Monster Mash stuff in the beginning. It had a little bit of rhyme in it, so I liked that. It was definitely catchy. You know, there's something about when you play with words or you add a little rhyme, it's almost like that teaspoon of sugar that makes the medicine go down. It makes the poem more lighthearted, even though it's making some serious statements. Drink to our nation's lack of heart, 3 steps forward, then take 4 steps back. It's a song of retrograde snacks. That's very much reminds me of, I don't know why, it has a feel of, even though I know it's based off Monster Mash, it has that feel of, I can't remember. Never mind. I'll just skip that thought. But, it gets into that serious thought. We are the atom bomb society dealing with our wrecks of ecology. We'd have done better building distilleries, making love, make love, not war, leave the beer with me. A wonderful humor, but also that idea of are we getting anywhere focusing on the violence and focusing on, you can tell it's the end of the night because I get into the middle of a thought and I lose it. But, is our focus for making ourselves and our nation better in the right area? Is our heart in the right area? And maybe we all just need to sit down and have a beer together. So excellent writing, very well done.
Absolutely. And Jeff, how about you? Jeff? Did we
leave? Yeah, for some reason this thing's being silly. I got to find the right button. I don't got no light, so I'm like, whoa, where's everything at? This is fun. I loved it. I like the way you read it. But once you start with that Monster Mash, I mean, I was tuned in. But yes, he kind of pours you in with some of the old music and things of that nature, and then we start going into some questions that I think a lot of people need to ask themselves is, are we really going anywhere? And we are the atom bomb society, and that could be a little bit of a play on, are we spoiled? Do we have it too easy or what? And what should we focus on? But I love the delivery. I think it was an awesome poem.
Absolutely. I did. I thought that Monster Mash opening up was a nice touch, that first banjo. I loved it. And the thought would be get a bottle of really nice brew, drink our nation's lack of heart, the atom bomb society, and then again finish, get a bottle of really nice brew while you're at it, bring me one too, that we will all be potted. There's a thought that rolls in this, maybe you got the wrong people sitting at the top, delegating things as opposed to actually offering up that which most cultures get along with anyway, which is you sit around, you toast with a drink, and you discuss things on a mutual level of respect, as opposed to these jumbotron idiots who think they've got everything in their handbaskets to make everything in the world all right, when all they're definitely involved in doing is making themselves a whole lot richer.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like that, Eric. And all right, with only a few minutes left, I'm going to bring us to the last poem of the night. We will have 3 carryovers, Victoria Frost, Wayne Gent, And the new guy who's Bruja de Savertry. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but okay. And our last poem for the night is Savant Sure by Eric Svensson. And it goes like this. Modern-day Mozart man from the old country, bellow blowtorched more than breaths of fresh air, brilliant intellect spiral twisters, guitar string twain, hurricane harassed, stained nerves, banality being burnt on nonconformist stakes, clever creative crucible held no prisoners, genius rubbed, scrubbed, plucked teeny guitar lamp, fragmented musical diction, heckled friction, hot-blooded Mozart man, scorched saccharin, budgy cages, wit and ironies, Dirksen administered through sound, sledgehammer acumen, titillating, quivering stamens, guitar strings, gestated, regurgitated, vagabond melodies, Salvador Dali of the music world, flamboyant peacock stage strutted, posed a thrill with marble David Nash, resilience rustled, stayed, river leads, blood of the old cobblestone country, lust for life, broiled, boiled wine, women and song, blue veins, sported intense intellect in musical forms, lithe and long body ruled Caesar, sure and cranium Colosseum. Primal pulse of modern Mozart man directed rivers, mojo, maestro of percussion and drums, soulful dark eyes and snared daylight, velvet nights devoured, jam ram compositions, debonair freedom, dance dashed, cymbal clashed, smashed, decorative decorum, rub, scrub, scrape, bottoms of guitar barrel, surrealist guitar voice, still milk, stayed, stubborn clocks. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And another marvelous piece. What'd you think, Jeff?
Well, this guy threw so much stuff at me and my brain short-circuited, to be honest with you. this was some really good stuff. I mean, there's just a lot of it as you're going along, an awful lot to absorb. But Salvador Dali of the music world, flamboyant peacock stage strutted, pose thrill of marble, David Panache, resilience rusted, stayed, river reeds. I mean, that there's an awful lot right in that, you know, and I loved it. I mean, this is another one of those poems that you could just read and read again, and it kind of lures you into wanting to do that. So as far as I'm concerned, it's really a great read.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Jeff. And Pam, how about you?
I love this. So much clever imagery and metaphors, wonderful wordplay and inner rhyme, and great tribute to Zappa, but also to many great artists. And I like how the melting ties in with the thought to Dali up about three stanzas before that. I mean, and there's so many wonderful parts to be touched on. I really do like saccharine budgie cages because of the idea that it's those people who are nothing more than show pets who, you know, sing pretty and not really stir things up. Yeah, I wish I could comment more, but obviously we're short on time, so great write.
Yep. We're at the back end of the show. Had a great time. Wonderful show, Pam. Thank you. Jeff, glad you came on board to help read and comment. That was a great time. Wonderful conversation pieces
yep.
in there, too. So,
yep, I appreciate it.
Thank you for being on board, though. Had a wonderful evening. Thank you.
You bet.
All
you guys
right.
all have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Bye. Good night.